Good morning. Today's Daf in Yevamos Kuf Zayin. We begin the 13th parak of the Masechta. We're approaching the end. There are 122 blot here in this Masechta, so we're at 107. That puts us pretty close to the end, but we do have a lot more parakim to cover. 13, 14, 15, 16, four more parakim to cover in this Masechta. As we see now, the last number of parakim, so they are all categorically one single topic. Previous parak, 12th parak, dealt with the mitzvah of chalitza, and just the mechanics of how chalitza is done. This parak over here, we're going to be dealing with one topic, and that's going to be the topic of miyun. Miyun is from a conceptual standpoint, fascinating topic. It's going to be a little bit difficult because it's going to just be a little bit challenging for us to relate to. Miyun is something that just simply does not occur bizmanenu. But nevertheless, from a conceptual standpoint, it's a really interesting topic. So let's go over the basics in terms of how we ever get to a point of miyun. So just the facts, in other words, the basic information that we need to know. As far as a woman is concerned, so a woman gets married only with consent, and there's no other way a woman can get married. Nisuin requires, Kedushin and Nisuin require consensual man, consensual woman. And when they both agree to the marriage under those circumstances, and only under those circumstances, they are going to get married, which means that a ketana by herself cannot get married. Obviously, a ketana does not have the requisite das necessary to get married. So therefore, a ketana does not get married. Now, what I just said is true, but not true. In other words, the ketana does get married, but you need das. So das is going to be provided for her. How does the das provided for her? So it's going to be done. It's going to be done through the, father. The Torah gives the father the right to marry off his daughter. And so through the father's das, so the daughter is going to get married. So this is how miyun is going to be accomplished. This is how we're not to miyun yet. This is how marriage is going to be accomplished. With that stated, so now, what if the father's no longer here? So that means that a minor can't get married. Now again, bizmanenu, what discussion are we having over here? Children don't get married. That's true. That's true nowadays. But back in the day, so they got married as children all the time. I mean, girls got married before 12 years of age. That for them was normal. Okay, that was that was normal activity back then. Remember, back in the day, marriage for a woman is, aside from all the things that come with the institution of marriage, you just basic protection for the woman. In other words, she's got a husband that's going to protect her, and so that is a really good thing. So back in the day, they got married as ketanim. Now, I say back in the day, by the way, I'm not even going so far back as the time of the Gemara, which meaning that they got married, the girls got married as minors, but I'm going back even to the time of the Rishonim. Tosfos makes a comment in Kedushin that even in his day, girls would get married at a minor age. Okay, so it is it was normal for girls to get married at a young age. Okay, only in the last 100 years. Has marriage been pushed off to the point I'm making is sociological, and has nothing to do with halacha, but it's true. Sociologically, only in the last 100 years, marriage got pushed off to the 20s and beyond. Even in our circles, even in our community. Okay, but anyway. With all that stated, Ketana can get married, but only when das is provided for her. And the Torah only gives one person that ability, that right to provide for her the das, and that's the father. So the father is given the Torah-given right of marrying off his daughter, and that marriage operates on a Doraisa level, meaning that when the Ketana gets married through the das of her father, she is now married min haTorah. Now, what if there's no father? Now, there's no father either because unfortunately, he died, or he's no longer halachically in the picture. And later, I'm not going to, I want to explain it right now, but later we'll talk about how the father can be removed from the picture. But it can happen halachically as well. So if there is no longer a father, either in real time or halachically, if there is no father, so now what? So now you have a ketana who's basically exposed, meaning she doesn't have the ability to get married, and she won't be able to get married until she becomes an adult. And the chachamim felt we got to create a mechanism of protection for her, meaning we're going to create marriage for her. So how did the chachamim create marriage for her? So they empowered either the brother or the mother to marry her off. So this marriage over here, where the brother or the mother marry her off, so this is not min haTorah, this is a rabbinic mechanism, where the chachamim now gave them the ability to marry her off. They are going to supply the das for her, but this operates not on a Torah level, this operates on a din derabanan. Therefore, when she becomes 12 years of age, The Chachamim gave her the following right, and that is that she can exercise her refusal. She has a right of refusal when she turns 12 years of age. Thank you very much for providing me the protection for all these years, but you know what? I'm not interested in the marriage. And she can annul the marriage. So this is our version of annulment. This is the time and the only time in Halacha where the marriage is now going to get annulled. Now, what does Miyun do? So not only does it annul the marriage, but it basically wipes it off of her slate. In other words, as far as her marriage is concerned, it's totally expunged. And as we're going to be learning in today's daf, even if she was with her husband and they were intimate with one another, doesn't matter. Meaning what Miyun is going to do is that Miyun is going to wipe out the marriage in total, and we'll learn together today, as early as today, that she wants to marry a relative of her husband. She can. Why? Because Miyun expunges the marriage. Okay. Let's say, and that obviously is a huge concept, meaning where else do you find this? Meaning where do we get to whitewash marriage and expunge it from her history? Okay, so it's a delete button that does not exist in any other realm of halacha. So needless to say, it's a really fascinating topic, and that's where we're going to begin today. Okay, good. Let's start with the Mishnah. We're on Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. At the very top, we're at the Mishnah. Beishamay Omrim Ein Memanim El Arusos. So Beisila Omrim Arusos V'Nesil. So we're going to rattle through five different machlokes in between Beishamay and Beisila in terms of the limits of Miyun. Number one, machlok is number one. According to Beishamay, Miyun can only be done only post Erusin. But once they go through Nesuin, so then Miyun no longer becomes an option to her. And Beisila says no, Miyun can be done even after Nesuin. Number two. Who can she do Miyun to? So according to Beis Shammai, she can only do Miyun to her husband. And according to Beis Hillel, she could do Miyun to both her husband and to the Yavam as well. That means, according to Beis Hillel, that let's say she got married as a katana. And again, the entire context of our parak is where she's married off not by her father, but either by her brother or by her mother. So according to Beis Hillel, she got married off by her brother or her mother, and as a katana, and her husband dies, and now she presents herself to the Yavam. So according to Beis Hillel, she still can exercise her right of refusal. She could still do Miyun to the Yavam. Okay, we're going to explore that in the second half of today's daf. Number three. Beis Shammai Amrim Befanav, Beis Hillel Amrim Befanav, V'Shelo Befanav. Okay, does she have to be present in front of him to do the refusal? Beis Shammai says yes. Beis Hillel says not necessary, meaning she could do Miyun even if she's not directly in front of him. Okay, she has to be in the Beis Din, but we'll come back to that later. Beis Shammai Amrim BeBeis Din, or Beis Hillel Amrim BeBeis Din V'Shelo BeBeis Din. In fact, we're going to do it right now. The fourth machlokus of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is a Beis Din is a Beis Din required. According to Beis Shammai, Beis Din is required. According to Beis Hillel, Beis Din is not required. Now I say that, and I said just moments earlier, Beis Din is required. So that's confusing. Hopefully, in a little bit, we're going to unconfuse everybody. Meaning, according to Beis Hillel, you don't need a Beis Din, but you do need a Beis Din. Okay, everyone got that? Okay, good. We'll do a better job at the end of today's daf explaining that better. Amrlan Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, and here we go now with the fifth machlokus, and that is Mema Enes V'Ikatana Afilo Dal V'Hepamim. Beis Hillel says that she could do Miyun multiple times, four or five times, meaning there's really an unlimited number of times that she could do Miyun. Which means, by the way, this is really strange, but it means that her mother or her brother married off to a man as a minor. She exercised her Miyun, and then they did it again, and she exercised it again, and okay. In other words, and she could do it. She could do it. She has an unlimited number of times that she could do Miyun. Beis Shammai. I'm sorry. Amar lehem Beis Shammai and Benos Yisrael Hefker. And Beis Shammai says that no. That's too much hefkeris. We do not allow for such open behavior. Okay, let's leave it like that. So Ela Mamenos Mamteres Hashitagdev V'Tamayim V'Tanase. Rather, there's only one bullet in the gun. She can only do Miyun once, and that's it. Now, the language of Beis Shammai over here is a little bit strange. The Gemara is going to pick up on it. She'll do Miyun once, and then when she gets older, she'll do Miyun again to the same man. Well, once she did it once, why does she have to do it again? The Gemara is going to ask that question. The Gemara is going to quote-unquote clean up the language of Beis Shammai. But anyway, but she only has one Miyun opportunity. Okay. So there are five different points of disagreement between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. And if we can, Let's have a theme alert right now. In other words, what we got from all this is that Beis Hillel is much more open in terms of her ability to refuse and annul, and Beis Shammai is much more constricting and much more limited. Okay, now this happens to be par for the course, meaning in just in terms of the general themes of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai tends to be a machmir, Beis Hillel tends to be a mako. Okay, as far as trends are concerned, these are trends. They're actual trends within the shitas of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So over here, Beis Shammai is really constricting in terms of when min can be done. You know, it can only be done from erusin, not from nisuin. It can only be done to the man, not to the avam. It can only be done in Beis Din, not outside of Beis Din. It can only be done befanav, not shalom befanav. Wow, I just rattled off all four. And it can only be done once and no more than once. So you see that according to Beis Shammai, her ability to do min is really limited. Mashenkin, according to Beis Hillel, he has a much more expansive ability for her to do mian. Okay, so that is your that's certainly a theme alert within the Mishnah. We start with the Gemara. The Gemara is going to really be focused on right now for the first half of today's daf, all the way to the bottom of our first amud. Gemara is going to be focused on that first machlokas in the Mishnah in terms of her ability to do mian even after nisuin. Beis Hillel says that she can, and Beis Shammai says she cannot. What is the Nekud HaMachlokas? What are they arguing about? The Gemara is going to give four different explanations of what this Machlokas is between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, my time at the Beis Shammai, what's the reason behind Beis Shammai Lefi Shein Tanai B'Nisuin? So, there is no conditions made by Nisuin. Meaning, a regular marriage, a man and woman, right, adults. So, let's say they get married conditionally. Right, he throws in a whole bunch of conditions into the marriage. So, if post-Kiddushin it was discovered that the conditions were not satisfied, okay, so we got married conditionally, but the conditions were not fulfilled, whatever the conditions are, okay, so we can now, we can tie the marriage to the condition. If the conditions are not satisfied, so then the marriage is undone. That's true by Kiddushin. But now you move on to the next stage of marriage, Nisuin. And that means that you and her were intimate with one another. So what do we say? So we say that because of the act of intimacy and because of the chiba that's created between him and her, any conditions that were there, he's mochel. This is an assumption we make, that he's mochel any of the conditions once they have bia together. Because it's an expression of chiba, and any conditions are he's mochel. Now, so what the Gemara is worried about is the following. I'm sorry, according to Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Beis Shammai is concerned about the following. If we allow her to do miyun, even post-Nisuin, people are going to look at that and people are going to say, oh, that's interesting. In other words, they were intimate and she has the ability to annul. And miyun, it looks a lot like a marriage that is done conditionally. Again, it's not. In other words, it's a whole different institution, but it certainly looks that way. If she could do miyun after Nisuin, I guess that also means that a woman and a man and a husband can now annul a regular marriage because the conditions weren't met, which happens not to be the case. Meaning, as we just learned together, once they were intimate one with the other, the assumption is that he's mochel any of the conditions that were made. So according to Beis Shammai, the reason why miyun can no longer be done after nisuin is because of the false perception that it creates for everybody. It makes everybody think that you can be mochel on your that you won't be mochel on your conditions even after nisuin. V'i nisua to mine aslamem or yeshanai b'nisuin. Okay, so that's exactly the reason behind Beis Shammai, and so the Gemara says, okay, before we move over to Beis Hillel, let's understand this a little bit better. Well, what if they weren't intimate with each other, but they had chuppah, meaning the second stage of marriage, which is chuppah. Okay, exactly what chuppah is, as we've discussed numerous times, we're not totally sure, but whatever it is, meaning the chasna. Let's call it simply, the chasna. So, lefi she'ein tanai b'chuppah, the Gemara says, well, happens to be that there are no conditions by chuppah as well, meaning that once you go under the chuppah, right, you're at the chasna. You're not just at the chasna, it's your chasna, meaning, right, you're the husband, you're the wife, you're at the chasna. So what do we assume? So Rashi says same thing. There's a tremendous amount of chiba at the chasna. And therefore, even if there were conditions, you're mochel. So now the Gemara says, so if we allow for miyun, so So isn't that going to create that false perception that maybe what if a girl can refuse her husband even after chuppah, maybe the same thing is true over here? So the Gemara says, well, ain't tonight b'chuppah. The Gemara says, no. Meaning, we are concerned about that false perception, and because the truth of the matter is that even by chuppah, a man is mochel any condition that he made. So the Gemara says, okay, look, I could talk about marriage as just simply a transactional act, meaning that sometimes a man and woman get married, second stage of marriage, and there's no chiba. In other words, we're talking about before they were intimate, we're talking about before there was a chuppah. Notably, let's say, for example, she was given from the shluchei habal, sorry, from the shluchei av to the shluchei habal, right? The best example I always think of is Rivka, okay? In other words, what happened? Rivka now has been shuttled over to Yitzchak. Okay, good. At that point in time, meaning right there, in other words, is she now married to Yitzchak once the shliach of the Baal has taken her? Yes. But at this point in time, it is all transactional, meaning there's no chuppah as of yet. Certainly there was no bia as of yet, and yet the marriage has taken place. So we've now encountered a situation in which if there was a condition, so you can understand now that at this point in time, there's not yet that chiba, and he wasn't mochel on those conditions. Okay, so Gemara says, lo plug rabbanan. So Gemara says, you're right. Good. Yishar koach. So you found a case where marriage can be created just as a transaction and without all the chiba. You're right. But most of the time, the vast majority of the time, marriage is created, second stage of marriage is created with chiba, meaning there's intimacy, there's chuppah. Both of those have a tremendous amount of chiba. And generally speaking, the husband's mochel. So Beit Shammai says that, look, the vast majority of times there's chiba and he's going to be mochel on his conditions. That's why the Beit Shammai's position is that when a girl is married as a kedusha ketana, so the reason why Mian no longer becomes, she's no longer eligible for Mian after Nisuin is because of the false perception that it creates. And most of the time in a parallel scenario of regular marriage, so most of the time the husband cannot uproot the marriage because even if there was a condition, he was moch on those conditions. Okay. Ubeisila media did Nisu Katana de Rabbananinu. And now that's all an explanation of Beit Shammai. And Beisila will tell you the following. No one's going to jump from Kedusha Katana to a regular marriage. Everybody understands. In other words, even as a general perception of Kedusha Katana is concerned, everybody understands Kedusha Katana is its own unique institution. The Chachamim empowered a brother or a mother to marry off her girl, and everybody understands that this is something different. It's unique. And the fact that she's going to be doing Mian, even post-Nisuin, no one's going to go from there to jump to now, oh, well, she did Mian? Okay, so in a regular case of marriage, where tanaim were made, where conditions were set into the marriage, oh, it's the same thing. No one's going to say it. No one's going to say that. According to Beis Hillel, everyone understands that this is something unique to the case of Kedusha Ketana. Okay. All that is explanation number one. We have three more explanations to go through. Rabbi Rav Yosef Darmi Tavai Tamid Beis Shammai Lefi Shein Adamos Abilas Abilas Nus. So a second reason behind Shitas Beis Shammai is the following. When a person is intimate with a woman, a person wants that intimacy to be done under the umbrella of marriage. Nobody wants to have just a bia that is znus, that's lewd, that's inappropriate. No one wants to do that. Now, obviously, this is a generalization, meaning Rachmanis, unfortunately, this is not a new phenomena. This has been around for a really long time. There have been men who have had relations that are bia znus. That part's true. In fact, Tosfos points out, by the way, there are Gemaras that speak to this idea as well, right? Tosfos, I'm not going to go through it right now, but the second Tosfos on the Amud. So this is a generalization, but good. As a generalization is concerned, when a man has bia, he wants it to be under the umbrella of marriage. Now imagine that a man marries this woman, again, Kedusha Ketana, and now it's going to come out that she's going to annul the marriage, meaning after they're intimate. She's going to now have the ability to annul the marriage, and that what all those bias now are no longer bias that are done under the umbrella of marriage. People don't want that. And since people don't want that, so therefore, according to Beit Shammai, her right of refusal will come to an end once they're intimate with one another. So the Gemara says, okay, but nichnasa lechupa v'lo nivala ma'ikal meimar. Again, same question. So why can't she do miyun just after chupa? Immediately after the chupa, she wants to do miyun. They weren't intimate with one another, so you've taken that off the table. So the Gemara says, lo nichalei. So the Gemara says, yeah, but still. In other words, people don't want that as well. Meaning, when men go to the chuppah, generally speaking, what they want is that chuppah to result in a permissible intimacy. So the Gemara says, okay, but masar av l'shulcha ba ma'ikal ameimar. So the Gemara says, okay, but what if the marriage is just simply transactional? Again, like the Rivka model. So there, B is no longer an issue. Chuppah is no longer an issue. So why not, under those circumstances, why not allow her to do miyun at that point in time? So Gemara says, lo plug rabban. Again, because that's not the majority. The vast majority of times, marriage, the second stage of marriage, will be with chuppah and with bia. So, and at that point in time, because of a man's reluctance to want to have a bia's nus, so therefore, what the chachamim did is removed her ability to do miyun after chuppah and after bia. And the truth of the matter is, even after Mesira, because again, that represents a small percentage of those of the marriages that will occur. And Beisil says, in the second explanation, Beisil would counter and say the following. People are not viewing this as bilas nus, meaning you married her, right? You had a wedding. This is all under the umbrella of marriage. I, at a later point in time, shall annul, and maybe retroactively we're going to look at all the bias as just simply bias nus. Yeah, that's true, but it's not going to upset him, because in other words, that's going backwards. But going forwards, you understand that you're marrying her right now, and the bia that you're having with her is under the umbrella of a bia of marriage. Okay. Rav Papa Amar, this is now going to be the third explanation for Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Rav Papa Amar, time of the Beis Shammai Mishum Peire. Time of the Beis Hillel Mishum Peire. Time of the Beis Shammai Mishum Peire. Okay, so what do we know? When a man is married to a woman and enters into the second stage of marriage, so what he can do is that he can help himself to all of her properties, meaning properties still are owned by her, but all the produce of the property now is going to be enjoyed by him. Okay, the Peiros. Now, so as far as Beit Sham is concerned, so look, let's consider. All right, a man is married through Kedusha Katana, and he now knows that this is a really terminal marriage. Okay, in other words, good chances is that at 12 years of age she's going to annul the marriage. Okay, so how much time do I have? So figure out whatever her age is. And I understand, by the way, this is the uncomfortable part of our whole discussion. We're talking about marrying an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old. Okay. And I could have gotten even younger, but okay. So I understand this is difficult for us to relate to, but okay. So let's say you married her at 8. So what does that give you? It gives you now 4 years of marriage, right? With a really good chance, again, it kind of depends, but a really good chance that at 12, she's going to just simply annul. Okay. So 4 years. And I got the produce for 4 years? Okay, so he's going to exploit. In other words, we're now talking about where he's got 4 years of the produce, so he's not going to take care of the property. All he's going to do is just basically get as much as he can, knowing that the marriage is going to be ending probably in 4 years. Okay, so therefore, Beis Shammai says, so you know what? We're just going to take his ability of miyun away. We'll take her ability of miyun away once Nisun is done, so that he does not take advantage of the property. It's to financially protect her. And Beis Hillel's counter argument will be the following. Oh, you know what? Same exact point, but you know what? It's not going to, it'll motivate him to take care of the property. Why? Because consider, right? Is the marriage going to terminate in 4 years? Meaning he marries her at 8. Is it going to terminate in 4 years? I don't know. It kind of depends on how she feels in 4 years. So I basically have 4 years to put my best foot forward. Okay. In other words, then if I'm going to show her that I'm not only going to take care of her, but I'm going to take care of her property as well. And I'm a good CEO. So 4 years comes and goes. So if anything, it won't cause me to exploit the property. If anything, it'll cause me to take even better care of the property, knowing that at 12, what she can do is that she can annul. So you know what? I'm going to try to make my best impression. I'm going to take care of her. I'm going to take care of the property. It's really interesting. This fourth explanation, it's the same piece of information, and it can go in one of two directions. It can go really south. That's the way Beit Shammai assumes. Or it could really be uplifting and motivational. That's the way Beit Hillel looks at it. I'm sorry. That was the third explanation. Sorry. Of the three explanations that we had so far, we had Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, we had Rav and Rav Yosef, we just had Rav Papa, and now the fourth explanation. Rav Amar Hanatam de Beit Shammai, Ein Adam Tarech Basuda U Mafsida. And the fourth explanation is the following. Look, you made a big chasna, okay? And that is, it costs a lot of money. And now what? And now you're going to make a big chasna only so that she can annul the marriage? Meaning, I don't want to do that. So from Beit Shammai's standpoint, the reason why her ability to annul is terminated at Nisuin is because, generally speaking, a man's not going to want to pay for a chasna only so that, you know what, she's just going to annul the next day. No one's going to want to do that. So therefore, is Beit Shammai, with that understanding, just simply says, you're right. We're gonna her ability to annul will terminate once you have the chasna. And Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel will counter, and Beit Hillel will say, no, you know what? I know it costs a lot of money, but you know what you get to do after the chasna? So when given the paperwork, the example I'm always thinking about is on the airplane when you're filling out the card. So on it, so they ask you, what's your status? Are you married or are you single? So you get to check off married. That's a big deal. So in other words, now that you get to check off that you're married and your status now is married, so you know what? I understand that this may not be a long-term marriage, and I understand, what are we looking at? Maybe 4 years of marriage. So, but you know what? It's worth it to me. It's worth it to me to have a status of being married. Okay. So again, part one of today's daf is, can a woman do miyun after? I say woman, by the way. Really, she's a minor. But can the minor do miyun after nisuin? Beit Shammai says no. Beit Hillel says yes. And the Gemara has provided us four different explanations in terms of what's behind the Shita of Beit Shammai, what's behind the Shita of Beit Hillel. Okay. Beit Shammai Omrim Bebal. Okay. Now we get to second machlokas of our Mishnah. And I admit this next section is going to be a little bit challenging. Okay. But it's hopefully I'll provide a clear explanation and we'll navigate. But this part's going to be challenging. Okay. So what's the second machlokas in the Mishnah? So her husband died, meaning she got married as a minor by her brother or by her mother. Her husband died, and now she's looking at the oven. And she didn't exercise her miyun with her husband, and now she's looking at the oven. Can she exercise her miyun with her yavam? So Beit Shammai says no, Beit Hillel says yes. Good. Amar Rabbi Oshia. So Rabbi Oshia says the following. Even within the Shita of Beit Hillel, that there is miyun to her yavam, that's only going to address the mimer, it won't address the zika. Again, everything we've been learning now for the last 3 months is going to come into play right now. And that, not everything, but a good amount. And that is that we know that once there's yibum, once there's an opportunity for yibum, so now, institutionally, what the Chachamim instituted was what's called mimer. Mimer is like a quasi-kedushin that he does to her, designating her now as the woman that he's going to do yibum with, and then he does yibum. So, according to Rav Oshia, when Beis Hillel in our Mishnah says that our Yavama can do miyun even to the Yavam, it's a really limited miyun. It's only going to be addressing the Mimer, obviously in a case where Mimer was done, but it will not address the Zika. Meaning the Zika is still there even after she does miyun. And so according to Rav Oshia, that's extraordinarily limited in terms of what her miyun can accomplish to her Yavam. It only addresses Mimer, and of course, only in the case where Mimer was done. So Amar Rav Chista, my time at the Rav Oshia, Mimer de Midaita. So now let's try to understand this. Why is Mian only addressing the Mimer? So the Gemara attempts to understand this cheat of Rav Oshia. So number one, Rav Chista proposes, well, Mimer can only be done willingly. A point that we made earlier in the Masechta. Meaning as far as the actual mitzvah of Yibam is concerned, so you don't need her consent. But for Mimer, you do need her consent. So Masyakra, since it has to be done, it can only be done with her das, so therefore she can be Ma'akir. But Zika de Baal Karcha, lo Masyakra. But when it comes to the Zika, Zika, she didn't have a choice in the Zika, meaning her husband died in the Torah, now slots her in, connected now to her brother-in-law. That's done by Karcha. So therefore, she can't be Makar, she can't uproot it. Her Miyun cannot address the Zika. So the Gemara says, Vahare Bia de Bakarcha, Umatia Akra. So the Gemara says, wait one second. Right? That can't be the Svara, because it's not true. Right? We know that Miyun can be done even after Bia. And you don't need her Das for Bia, and yet you could do Miyun can address a Ketana who Bia was done with. So the Gemara says, Ela Bia Maimer, de Hukavid, Matiakra Zika Derechman Ramallah La Matiakra. So Gemara is fine. So we're going to say it a little bit differently, and that is that when it comes to Bia, when it comes to Mimer, so that's something that is done from our standpoint. Meaning, Mimer is done by the Avam, Bia is done by the Avam. Meaning, those are action points that are done down here. When it comes to Zika is orchestrated by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, there is no human involvement when it comes to Zika. Meaning Zika is just simply a function of the fact that her husband died, and now the Zika is there. So that's all min hashamayim. That's something that the Miyun cannot address. Okay, so according to Rav Oshia, when our Mishnah takes the position, when Beis Hillel takes the position in our Mishnah, that Miyun can be done to the Yavam, so Rav Oshia's understanding is that's really limited, extraordinarily limited. That only means that Miyun can address a Mimer, but Miyun cannot address the fundamental Zika that's still there. Okay. And why? So the Gemara gave a couple of svaras of why that should be, but effectively, Miyun only addresses a Mimer, it does not address a Zika. Ula Amar Mamenes Afla Zika So. And Ula says, no. Miyun is going to be addressing the Zika, meaning that her ability to refuse not only will address Mimer, it'll address the fundamental Zika that's there. So my time in the Suha Kamai Ka'akra. Because what does Miyun do? Miyun mechanically performs retroactively. Okay? I know that's a mouthful, but that's what Miyun does. It basically takes us back to her original marriage, expunging the original marriage. So in other words, once the original marriage goes away, so then everything that flows from that original marriage also gets expunged. Okay? Miyun is a time machine. I know I'm getting a lot of funny looks right now. I understand this is a lot to wrap our heads around. So and since it retroactively takes away the marriage, so therefore there's no original marriage, there's no Yavam, there's no Zika, meaning it just simply knocks everything out.
Which Miyun is
her
first marriage?
Yeah, right.
The husband's dead. So
good. I understand. Right. Correct. It's retroactive. Right. Okay. It's a lot. Eitz ve'rava le'ula. So now, this position of Ula obviously is the most fundamental way of looking at Miyun. Miyun is retroactive. So the Gemara says, really. Let's go back. And when I say go back, let's go all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta. Do you remember? So in the beginning of the Masechta, so our first Mishnah, dealt with the following. What happens if your Yavama also happens to be your daughter? Okay. Can happen easily. And 14 other cases as well of Arias. But I'll just focus on the daughter because that's the easiest case. And that's the prototype case. Meaning that what happens? Your brother married your daughter. He's totally licensed to do so. Right? The recommended from the Gemara standpoint. Nowadays, less so. But in other words, you can marry your niece. Right? A relative who's not an erva to you. So your brother married your daughter, and Rachmanis, he died. And now your daughter presents to you for Yibam. So you remember what we learned on day one of the Masechta? And that is, there's no mitzvah of Yibam, meaning she's an erva to you, and therefore there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Not only is she exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam, the co-wife's also going to be exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam. Okay. All of the above. Now, let's say she was married as a ketana. Now, this part's going to be tricky, and I'm going to say it with the understanding that it's complicated. Now she got married as a ketana. Now you're the father. You're right here. How is she getting married as a ketana, right, by her brother or by her mother? When meanwhile you're right here. So I'll say right now, and it's and what I'm saying now is insufficient, but I'm saying it, and that is it's possible. It's possible for a for a girl to get married Kedusha Ketana, even though the father's still alive. Okay. And I recognize that's not a good enough explanation, but it's possible. So she got married Kedusha Ketana, and now her husband dies, and now she presents herself to her Yavam. Yavam happens to be an Erva. Again, your daughter now just presented herself to you as a Yavama. The Mishnah says, Kol she'yichol amayin, when she had the ability to do miyun, this is the Mishnah on Daf Beis. V'lo miyana, but she didn't do miyun, so it's a rasa cholesef v'lo misyabem. So what are the co-wives going to do? They can only do chalitza, they cannot do yibam. Now, why? So again, when we learned the first Mishnah, I probably said something along these lines. Well, this marriage is not a real marriage, meaning it's not an nisuin d'araisa, it's a nisuin d'rabanan, so that means that mina Torah it's not a real marriage. So the only time that an erva is going to exempt the co-wives is only when we're talking about the erva is really married to her husband. But over here, it's not a real marriage. It's not a marriage min haTorah. And so therefore, the co-wives are no longer co-wives of an erva min haTorah. And so therefore, they have to be addressed. They're not exempted. Okay, now, but because there was a quasi-marriage or there was some semblance of marriage, so they can't do yibam. Because it certainly looks like they are the co-wives of an erva. Okay, so therefore, there's a zika still to the other wives, and therefore they have to do chalitza. Okay, that's what we said. Okay, now as we are studying miyun and analyzing miyun, so now let's ask a really powerful question. Ula, you're of the position that what miyun does is it expunges retroactively to the first husband, totally whitewashing now the marriage. It's no longer there. The marriage never existed. So now, Ula, according to you, I got this great idea. If the erva was in a position to do miyun, so let her exercise her miyun. Even as a yavama, let her exercise her miyun. That will uproot her marriage to the first husband. And now let all the other wives just simply do the mitzvah of yibum. Right? Simple. The Gemara asks exactly this question. So the Gemara says, Saraservashani. So the Gemara says, look, Ula basically will say to you the following. I'm not budging from my position, meaning that what Mian does is expunges. Not only when her husband was alive, even after her husband died. And now she has a Zika to her Yavam, and Ula says she could still do Mian, and that will uproot retroactively the marriage to her first husband. I'm not budging. It just happens to be that in the case of Yibam, it's different. Saras Erva Shani. Now why? The Gemara goes on to explain. Look, she, in general, will you do miyun to your husband? Okay, so again, what does it do? It expunges. It knocks out the marriage. It annuls it. Now, at a later point in time, you want to marry her father, your husband's father, go for it. Because he wasn't your husband. Meaning miyun retroactively knocks it out. However, once you do miyun to your yavam, you cannot marry your father-in-law. Okay, what's the difference? So, Alma b'shas nefil nirka kalaso hachanami b'shas nefil nirka tzaras bito. Because what happens is that because you fell to yibum, so that gives more of an appearance of marriage. And I know this sounds funny, but it's okay. It's fine. I'll try to spell it out. Meaning, when she was married to her husband through Kedusha Ketana, and she does miyun, and she exercises her right of refusal, and she uproots the marriage. So I know that looked like marriage. I know that, right? And they were intimate with one another. Again, we're within Shitas Beis Hillel. They were intimate with one another. I know that. But again, everyone understands, this is what we learned on the Amud Aleph, everyone understands that the institution of Kedusha Ketana allows for miyun to occur. Meaning this is the case where we accept the annulment. And everyone understands that. And so therefore, at a later point in time, you want to marry now your quote-unquote father-in-law, go for it. Because he's not your father-in-law. You annul the marriage to her son. Okay. But once Yibam occurs, so now from a perception standpoint, meaning fundamentally it's the same, but from a perception standpoint, meaning you were so married that now you have a Zika to your brother-in-law, and again, you could do miyun, and that can annul the marriage, and it can annul the first marriage. It's all true, but from an appearance standpoint, it really looks like you were married. So as a result of that, the Chachamim now said, even if you did miyun, you can't marry your father-in-law. Why? Because you falling to yavam looks like marriage. Okay, so Amrav mi. Okay, fine. Adkan. So where are we right now? We are in a machlokus of how to understand Beis Hillel regarding her ability to do miyun to her yavam. Rav Oshi and Ula. Rav Oshi is of the position that miyun can only be done to address a mimer, but that's it. According to Rav Oshi, her ability of miyun to the yavam is extraordinarily limited. Masha'in Kain, according to Ula, no, it's more fundamental. In other words, what miyun is going to do is it's going to uproot the original marriage. Okay, good. Amar Rav. So next discussion. And the Gemara will connect this discussion to the previous one. Next discussion. As a Yavama, she wants to do Miyun to her Yavam. And let's say there's more than one Yavam. Okay? In other words, it could be that her husband was survived by multiple brothers. So now, Amarav Miyana Bezeh Asur Lezeh. Midadave Balas Ges. Balas Haget. Lav Kevin Di Itzere Le Lechad Itzere Le Lekulu. Hachanam Eloshnam. So Rav says, once she does Miyun to one of the Yavams, it will disqualify her to all the Yavams. Okay. If I had to guess, which I don't have, I'm not entitled to an opinion, but if I had to guess, I'd say something along these lines, meaning it's mistaber. Meaning once she's electing her right of refusal, once she's exercising her right of refusal, so that not only is true regarding whoever she picked up, any one of the Yavams, but basically that basically means I want out, and she will be disqualified to all the Yavams. Ushmul Amar Miyana Bezeh Mutaris Lezeh. Now Shmuel says no. Once she does Miyun to one, that does not disqualify to the other brothers. Now Velo Dami LaBala Saget. Bala Saget Hu DeKavid BaHachi He Kaav DeBei De Amra Lo Ra'ina Bach Velo Tzavina Bach Bachu DeLo Ra'ina HaBechaver Chareina. And what Shmuel will tell you is the following. Look, when it comes to a get, remember how get operates within the world of Yibum? Meaning if one of the brothers gives her a get, Minatara, it is not recognized, but the Chachamim recognized it. And basically, it is the beginning of the end. Meaning, it's a demonstration of, we don't want to do Yibum. Fine. And she's disqualified. Now she's disqualified to all the brothers. Good. But over here, when it comes to Mian, remember, where's Mian coming from? Is it coming from him or coming from her? Mian, of course, is coming from her. So Shmuel will tell you the following. Here's how to interpret her Mian in Yibum. And that is when one of the brothers comes over and says, I want to do Yibum to her. And she says, nope, I'm exercising my Mian ability, my refusal ability. So in the context of Yibum, Shmuel understands it to mean, basically what I'm saying is, I'm not out of this marriage. I still want in the marriage. I still want in Yibum. It just happens to be that I know that there's a couple of choices over here. What I don't want is you. That's all. Meaning, as long as there are multiple brothers, Shmuel's understanding now is that her Mian is basically just simply saying, I don't want you. That's all. Rav Asi Amar Mina Bezeh Mutaris Afilo Lo. So Rav Asi takes a really strange position, and that is that Miana Bezeh, that if she does Mian to one of the brothers, she's mutter to all the brothers, including the one she did Mian to. Huh? So Lema Karev Oshi Asfirle. Darma Enam Amenes Lezika So. So to understand Rav Asi, so the Gemara now is going to do an alignment. Meaning, Rav Asi must be holding like Rav Oshi, right? Remember, Rav Oshi said, how does Mian work within the construct of Yibum? Extraordinarily limited. What does Yibum do? Sorry. What does Mian do? It only does one thing. Yes. It only addresses Mimer. It only cancels the Mimer. But it doesn't address the fundamental Zika. So when Rav Asi says that when she does Mian, she's allowed to all the brothers, including the brother she did Mian to? Okay. So it very well could be that Rav Asi is operating within Rav Oshi. So, Lema Kareb Oshi Asfir Le Damar Inim Amenas Lezika So. So, Bechad Yavam Hachanam Demasi Akra. So the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe if there's one brother, maybe Rav Asi will tell you that she could be Oker the Zika. But Hacha B'Shnei Yavamim Maskinim. But obviously over here we're talking about where there's more than one Yavam. And maybe what Rav Asi will tell you is that Mian cannot address a half of a Zika. Meaning if there are multiple brothers, surviving brothers, so then that means that there's multiple Zikas coming at her, and maybe her Mian cannot uproot a half of a Zika. Meaning if there are multiple brothers, so one brother represents obviously a fraction of the Zika, and maybe Mian cannot address that. Ki also Rav Amar Rav Yochanan Mian b'zeh mutar slachin v'lo hodu lo. Rav Yochanan says that when she does Mian to one of the surviving brothers, it will still allow her to marry any of the other brothers. So man lo, and the Chachamim don't agree to him. So man lo hodu lo. So now, who's not in agreement with Rav Yochanan? So over here, we don't know, a couple of proposals. Amar Abaye Rav. So Abaye says it's Rav. Rav is the one who disagrees with Rav Yochanan. Because as we just learned, according to Rav, once you do Mion to one, that disqualifies all. Rav Amar Rav Yoshia. And Rav will tell you that Rav Yoshia disagrees with Rav Yochanan. The Amri La Rav Asi. Or some will say that it's Rav Asi who disagrees with Rav Yochanan. Meaning you have a number of candidates who could be on the other side of that machlokus of Rav Yochanan. Okay. Good. Adkan. All right. So that admittedly was a bit of a complexity. But just to quickly review, just a mid-daf review. So basically what comes out over here is that in our Mishnah, Beis Hillel allows for the Yavama to do Mian. She was married Kedusha Ketana to her first husband. Her first husband dies. She's still a Ketana. She still has that right of refusal. She could still exercise her Mian. And Beis Hillel says she can do Mian to her Yavam. Okay. What does that mean? So that's unclear. And we had two fundamental positions amongst the Amoraim, Rav Hoshea and Ula. Rav Hoshea says that Mian only by Yavam only addresses her Mimer, meaning that if Mimer is done to her by the Yavam, so what it does is that it can uproot the Mimer. But that's it. It doesn't address the fundamental Zika. Masha Einkein, according to Ula, Mian is going to uproot the Zika. How? Because what Mian does is it goes all the way retroactive back to her first marriage. And it uproots that first marriage. Meaning Mian is retroactive. And so it uproots the first marriage. She was never married to her first husband. Ergo, there's no Yibum, there's no Zika, etc., etc. Okay. So, and then, within this machlokas of Rav Hoshea and Ula, then, when she does Mian to one of the brothers, meaning there are multiple surviving brothers, and she does Mian to one of the brothers, what are going to be the fallout of that Mian? Will it make her disqualified to all the brothers? Will it make her disqualified only to the one brother that she actually did Mian to? Or perhaps she still is going to be eligible to all the brothers, even the one she did Mian to? All three of those positions are on the table. And then it's just a question of how to understand any one of those three positions within the machlokis of Rav Hoshea and Ula.
Okay. According to Rav Hoshea, does she just only get
meaning, according to Rav Hoshea, correct. In other words, all that Zika can do, again, I said it wrong. All that Mian can do is just simply wipe away the Mimer, correct. Now that leaves you just with the Zika and then Chalitza. No, in other words, get only the get is only to address the Mimer. She can knock out the Mimer, but
the Mian wipes out the
ice. Okay. Beit Shammai Omrim Befanav. Finishing up now, we're going to go to the Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim Befanav. V'chule. Tanya Amar Lem Beis Hillel Beit Shammai V'alo Pishon Agamal. Mi'ana Ishto Shelo Befanav. Okay, so here, we get a brisa, we get a little dialogue between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. We're up to now the third machlokis, and that is Befanav and Shelo Befanav. According to Beit Shammai, Mian can only be done when he's here, when the husband's here. And according to Beit Hillel, no, Mian can be done even when the husband's not there. So, Beis Hillel says to Beit Shammai, let's go over precedent. There's a case. And it happened was that there was this camel driver. He's given a name, Pishon. And what happened was is that Mian was done by his wife, Shelo Befanav. Again, he married a minor, Kedusha Ketana. She had a right of refusal. She exercised it. And even though he was gone, meaning as a camel driver, you know, that's his occupation. He's away for a really long time. Anyway, she had enough of him being away, and so she exercised Mian, and even while he wasn't there. And you know this case happened, Beis Hillel says to Beit Shammai. So, Amar lem Beit Shammai Beis Hillel, Pishon Agamal, b'mida kefusha madad, lefichach madula b'mida kefusha, midika achal peire. So the Gemara says, yeah, Beit Shammai says to Beis Hillel, so yeah, you're right. We're not arguing with the case. What we're going to argue with is that was not Midas Hadin. That was not the basin over there did not operate within the strict letter of the law. They went above the letter of the law. Why? because he behaved in a really inappropriate manner. In other words, he took her properties, he exploited her properties, right? He abused this marriage. Once he abused the marriage, the Chachamim basically said to him, okay, so new? So you operated totally inappropriately? We're going to do so in kind. Mida keneged mida. So, Pshita Nesua Hiv, Amri Beisham Nesua Lomem Ana. Now, the Gemara says that we know that this falls under the category of penalty. We know that this is, according to Beishamai, the Beis Din is penalizing him. How do I know that? Because consider, what stage of marriage did they go through? They went through both stages of marriage, obviously. Meaning, this particular case, Pishon married her, not just Kedushin, but Nesun as well. And remember, what did Beishamai say? Mian is no longer an option. So what we now know already is that for Beishamai's standpoint, this is a case of penalty. This is not the letter of the law. So the Gemara says, correct. Excellent point. Trey kitrei avdubei. You're right. In other words, what happened over here is that they penalized, followed them by penalized. Right? For Beishamai, it's a double penalty. Meaning normally after Nisuan, Mian is no longer on the table. Yeah, but Beishamai says we're putting it back on the table because of his poor behavior. Secondarily, according to Beit Shammai, he's not here. How could she do Mian? Again, normally that's off the table. We're putting it on the table, right? So it's a double penalty. The obvious question. If Mian is taken off the table, how can the Chachamim put it back on the table? Meaning, okay, I understand. He acted inappropriately. We'd like to penalize him. Okay, but over here, if Mian is taken off the table, so how do you put it back on the table? Tosfos addresses that. Look at the third Tosfos over here. Ein zekusha kol kach. Deikalamem de kedusha kedana de rabbanan inu vafkin rabban le kedusha minayu. Look, all this marriage is done through the Beis Din. This is a rabbinic legislation, and we know that the Chachamim have the ability under limited circumstances to be mafkin kedusha minay. Okay, we discussed it earlier in the Masechta, a limited circumstance in which it's done. Here as well. Normally Mion is taken off the table, yeah. But this marriage, this institution of marriage is midrabanan, so therefore the Chachamim can put these things back on the table as well. Okay. Almost done. Beishamai Omer Bifnei Beizdin Vichule. Right? Yeah. Tananasa Machalitza Vaimion Bishlosha. So that first Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Right? The first Mishnah in Sanhedrin talks about how many judges I needed for what kind of case. Okay, civil case, 3 judges. Capital case, 23 judges. Chalitza and Mion, Bishlosha. So the Mishnah over there in Sanhedrin, Stam Mishnah, tells us that when you're doing Chalitza, when you're doing Mion, so you need how many judges? 3. Okay, good. So Tana Am, so Mantana Mara, Babi Shamahi. So good. So that Mishnah in Sanhedrin. So now, you learned the first Mishnah of the 13th parak of Yevamos today. Good. We know it's a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel whether or not I need a Beis Din. Beis Shammai says you do, Beis Hillel says you don't. For Mion. Now I go back to the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin. It's a Stam Mishnah. And it tells me that I need 4 Mion. I need 3. Oh. So, that Stam Mishnah is like Beis Shammai? So Rabbi says, yeah, correct. Good. Good deduction. Abai Amar Afila Tema Beis Hillel. And Abai says, no, don't do that. Right? It is going to be strange for a Stam Mishnah to be found like Beis Shammai. Abai says, you don't need to go there. So, Ad kan lo kamri Beis Hillel ela dela bina mumchen. Ava shlosha b'inan. So now, I made a cryptic comic earlier this morning, and now we get to clarify. So for Beis Hillel, do I need a Beis Din? No. Do I need 3? Yes. Okay. And how does that work? It's very simple. Meaning, I need a Beis Din of non-mumchen. Meaning, that there's a Beis Din and there's a Beis Din. Right. In other words, sometimes the Beis Din is required where every member of the Beis Din needs to be a mumcha. I'm going to say an expert, but I mean more than an expert. Meaning, he needs to have smicha. Right. He needs to be a member of Beis Din. And then there's just simply a collection of 3 guys. Okay. And so that's the Mishnah in Sanhedrin. That first Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says that for me and I need 3. It means you just simply need to collect 3 people. Okay. And but they don't have to be mumchen. Kid de Tanya, the Gemara says, I have a brisa. Beis Shammai Amrim Bifnei Beis Din. Beis Hillel Amrim Bifnei Beis Din. V'shelo Bifnei Beis Din. Be'elav Elamodin Shitzarach Shlosha. Oh, okay, fine. And in fact, the brisa spells it out. Even Beis Hillel says that you don't need a Beis Din, but you do need 3. So Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Machshir, and Bishnayim. They say that two would be acceptable. I'm Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yom, I'm Rav Nachman, Halachikoso Azug, or the other gear says, Ain Halachikoso Azug. Either way, point is that in the Mishnah of Sanhedrin, when it says three, that could even be going like Beis Hillel. What Beis Hillel and our Mishnah meant when it says that you don't need a Beis Din, means you don't need a Beis Din Mumchen. But in other words, but you still need three. And finally, to finish off the daf, Beit Shammai Omrim Tema'in, V'ha Mi'en Achad Azimna. Okay, how many times can a woman exercise Mi'en? So that was the last machlokas in our Mishnah between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beit Shammai says only on one occasion can she do so. And Beis Hillel says no, she could do so multiple times. But in the wording of the Mishnah, when Beit Shammai says only one time, so Beit Shammai says, look, I don't want Benos Yisrael to be a hefkerim, meaning to just simply jump and bounce from one husband to another husband to another husband. And after every time she's going to be exercising me, and I don't want that. Ella, mima enes, umamtenes ashtagdil. She'll do miyun. She'll wait till she gets to becoming an adult. Vitimain vitinase. She'll do miyun as an adult again. Now remember, according to Beit Shammai, she only did miyun. She can only do it one time. So and she's doing miyun twice. So the Gemara says the Gemara is going to ask exactly that question. Vehamiyana chadazimna. According to Beit Shammai, she did miyun already when she refused her husband, right? And now she's doing it again when she becomes an adult. So Amr Shmuel Ashitagdil v'tamar rotzani b'miunim harishonim. So Shmuel explains as follows. All she's doing as an adult, meaning when she turns 12, all she's doing is she's just basically ratifying her miun. Meaning, she did miun once, and then at 12 she's ratifying it. So, ulam artarti katani. O shetamayim v'tagdil v'teares. O shetamayim v'tinase la'altar. Ula gives a different shot. In other words, what the Mishnah is saying is that really for her, there are two options. Either option number one is that, she will do miyun and she'll get, and she'll become an adult and then accept erusin as an adult from another man. Alternatively, tema'in v'tinase la'altar. She'll do miyun and she'll get remarried immediately. But if she gets remarried immediately, it's going to be without the option of miyun. Now, bishlam ula haina diktani ashitagdil v'tinase. The Gemara, as far as the first pshat is concerned, the Gemara is unhappy with that first pshat. Because in that first pshat, if all she's doing is just ratifying, so then the Mishnah should just simply say, Ashitagdil vitomar. Meaning, because all that's happening at 12 is that she's just simply ratifying what was done when she did Mian. So, Kasha, the Gemara says, you're right. That's difficult. The wording of the Mishnah really fits in better with the second pshat, not the first pshat. Okay. Ad Kan, that takes us through the first daf of the 13th parak of the Masechta. Let's recap. A girl's married off either by her brother or by her mother. Min HaTorah, she's not married. The Chachamim instituted marriage. It's a means of protection for this girl. She has a husband that's going to take care of her. So it's a means of, it affords a protection. Good. She also has the ability to refuse this marriage, a right of refusal. It's called Miyun. So we are going to be spending a couple days together. It's not a long parak. All right, 5 days together, no more, six days together, going over this really strange marriage and her ability to extricate herself from this marriage. And this is what's called miyun. So in our first daf here in this parak, so what do we learn? Five machloksim that exist between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. And the general theme is that Beit Shammai is extraordinarily limited in terms of this ability that the Chachamim afforded her to refuse the marriage and to annul the marriage. And according to Beis Hillel, it is more expanded. Those five machloksim are, number one, according to Beit Shammai, Miyun can only be done after Erusin, but not after Nisuin. Beis Hillel allows it even after Nisuin. Number two, Miyun can be done to the husband, but not to the Yavam. According to Beis Hillel, it can even be done to the Yavam as well. Number three, it can be done only befanav, according to Beis Shammai, where Beis Hillel says, no, it can be done befanav, and shelo befanav. Number four, it can only be done in front of Beis Din, according to Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says in front of Beis Din, and even not in front of Beis Din. And finally, number five, how many times can she do Miyun? According to Beis Shammai, once, and according to Beis Hillel, on multiple occasions she could do Miyun. Okay, in the Gemara's discussion that we had today, number one, what's behind the machlok is Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, where Beit Shammai says she can only do Miyun after Kedushin, and Beit Hillel says she can do it even after Nisuin. four different explanations in terms of what the machlokus is going to be grounded on. Number two, the machlokus of her ability to do mi'un to her yavam, which is the shita of Beisela, obviously the one we accept. But within that shita, what does that mean? She could do mi'un to her. She could do mi'un to her. To her yavam. So that's a machlokus between Rav Oshia and Ula. Rav Oshia says that the mi'un is only addressing maimer. And according to Ula, no, it addresses the fundamental zika. Why? Because it goes back retroactively and uproots the original marriage. Good. When she does mi'un to her yavam, what does that mean regarding her ability to do yibum with any of the other brothers? That is a three-way machlokus in the Gemara. Rav Asi, and Shmuel. Rav Yochanan also has an opinion in that. And then the Gemara goes on to describe how those opinions intersect with the shitas of Ula and Rav Oshia. Okay, and finally, the machlokus of Befanav Shel Befanav. So, the Gemara tells us the story of Pishon the camel driver, where they allowed for mi'un to be done even though he wasn't there. Beit Shammai says, you're right. But that wasn't the letter of the law. The Chachamim penalized him because of his poor behavior. The Mishnah and Sanhedrin that says that for mi'un you need three, and it's the Stam Mishnah. Is that going like Beit Shammai? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. It could be going like Beis Hillel as well. Meaning the Beis Hillel says you don't need a Beis Din, but you do need three. Just you don't need Beis Din Mumchen. And finally, when Beis Shammai says that she can only do mi'un one time, the wording of the Mishnah is funny. It says she'll do mi'un, and then as an adult, she'll do mi'un. But if it's only one time, why is she doing a double mi'un? So the Gemara offered a couple of pshatim in terms of how to understand Shitas Beis Shammai. Sure.